flower communion has a good deal to do with beauty and the opening of the heart that happens in response to beauty. I believe that we have all just had our hearts opened by some musical beauty. We are well prepared for worship. The flower communion symbolizes many ways in which we are community, that we come together with great diversity, each having individual beauty. The idea behind the flower communion, which was originated in Czechoslovakia in the mid-1900s by the Unitarian minister Norbert Čapek, who had thousands of members in his congregation in Czechoslovakia. The idea is that everybody brings a flower of their own choosing, and in the end of the service, we each take a flower home with us that we did not bring, so we are sharing our beauty with one another. These are my opening words. We come in a variety of colors, shapes, and sizes. Some of us grow in bunches, some grow alone. Some of us are cupped inward, and some of us spread ourselves out wide. Some of us are old and dried and tougher than we appear. Some of us are still in the bud. Some of us grow low to the ground, and some of us stretch towards the sun. Some of us feel like weeds sometimes. Some of us carry seeds sometimes. Some of us are prickly. Some of us smell, and all of us, each of us is beautiful. What a bouquet of people we are. What a beloved community. And so it is. Welcome.
Good morning again. I know that there are all kinds of emotions and feelings and questions arising after Betty's announcement that she will be retiring in another year. And I want to share some thoughts and ideas with this congregation about the role of an interim minister, because that will be our goal during this next year. One of the most difficult tasks human beings have for the duration of their lifetime, from the time they're born till the time they end their lives, is separation. We're born connected, the cord gets cut, and from then on, the process of making connections and attaching for coming together and separating becomes the task as we move into from childhood to adulthood and through all the phases of our lives. So I know that many of us have strong feelings or ambivalence or fears or anxieties about this process, and I want to share some notes with you from the Transitional Ministry Handbook. News of a minister's departure may be received with all kinds of emotions. The purpose of the interim ministry is to enable a congregation to call a successor minister based not on reflexively, but on the basis of its own independent identity, strength, and direction. In sum, based on its health. It is difficult to overstate the opportunity provided to a congregation during this interim period. It is a chance to begin anew. The interim period following the end of one relationship and preceding the beginning of another can be often offers an opportunity to provide breathing space during which a congregation can review its goals, assess its programs, consider the quality of its life in common, and tune up, so to speak, for a new era. The 1 to 2 year period it usually takes for a congregation to grow into its own identity can be exciting. It can be transformative. When devoted to self-examination and institutional renewal, wonderful things happen. It's kind of like a palate cleanser, sorbet between courses. For 25 years now, the UU congregations and other mainstream Protestant and faiths and some synagogues have depended on interim ministers to deal with the phenomena of transition. Congregations not hiring an intentional interim minister during a ministerial transition often find themselves having called an unintentional interim minister. So it's important that we go about this process in a structured way with a professional person to enable congregations to enrich their sense of religious community during this transitional period. The specially trained interim minister does many things. They help to bring reassurance that a seasoned professional is working with the congregation. Momentum will not be lost. The search for a new minister will not be unduly pressured, and people can be part of that process. A specially trained interim minister will help deal with termination emotions, those feelings that we're all going to have surrounding our beloved minister who has helped to build this congregation and make us what we are. A professional interim minister will help our congregation review its operational processes and clarify our goals, and the new minister will thus find the congregation to be a moving train instead of a stalled bus waiting for a driver or, in some cases, a mechanic. And a professional interim minister will model a different but still successful style of ministry, thus showing all of us, this congregation, many of whom have only known Betty in this role, that there are many different styles and more than one ministerial style that can be effective. So we will beginning this process probably next spring. Betty is going to be with us throughout this coming year. And at that point, we will call a interim minister to work with the congregation for the period it takes before we are ready to call a settled minister. And I invite any of you that have questions or concerns to talk to a board member, to talk to Betty, and stay connected. This is going to be a wonderful, wonderful process, and we're going to grow and learn. Thank you.
Well, we're surrounded by flowers this morning. Who likes flowers? I love flowers. They're one of my favorite things. I think a lot of people feel that way. Do you guys feel that way, you kids? Do you love flowers? Yeah, what's your favorite flower?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Well, morning glory.
Morning glory, good answer. Anyone else have a favorite flower? Yeah? All flowers, perfect answer.
Me too.
You too, that's great. I love them all. I find myself in the car smiling and laughing and, if truth be known, sometimes talking to the flowers. It's true. So, we're all learning lessons in life. We do. You know, sometimes we learn them in class. Sometimes you even come into a sanctuary, considering that you might learn a lesson or two. But there's a great, great classroom out there, right out there in nature, where we're going to be playing, I'm sure, on our own later this day. Over and over again, in every season of our lives, on every terrain of our journey, nature is our great teacher. Today I'm asking the questions, what do flowers mean to you? It's so easy to be mindless about nature, to be mindless about flowers, but just with a little shift in perception, just with a little bit of intention, as we open our hearts and our spirits, nature can indeed be vibrant as a teacher in our lives. we discover answers in the flowers, for flowers disarm us. You know what that means? They surprise us. They catch us unaware. We're going along our merry way, and then, whoa, the beauty of a flower disarms us, opens our hearts. They disarm us. It is impossible to be proud or separate or self-important in the company of flowers. For by first unlocking our hearts, the flowers speak our language, and we believe them. That's not true of all teachers, is it? We don't believe everything every teacher says, but a flower, it disarms our heart, and we believe them. When I was a student minister, the congregation that I worked with in Bedford, Massachusetts, gave me a stole with flowers on it, and somebody made a little magnet for my refrigerator, and it said, "Make like a flower, turn to the light." Turn to the light. And that's one of the great lessons of flowers. Actually, that's one of my favorite lessons in life. Turn towards the light. You always have a choice. Even if there's clouds up there, the sun's behind it. In life, if we turn towards the light, what happens when a flower turns towards the light? Does anybody know? Emma? It starts to grow. Exactly. It starts to grow. It lifts its head. It becomes radiant. What a lesson. Just this morning, I had to turn some plants around in my house so that a new part of them would face towards the light and grow and shine and be radiant and make me smile. So make like a flower. Turn towards the light. What do flowers mean to you? What lessons have you learned? I just got to read a poem. A poem by Mary Oliver called Daisies. You know, daisies are such great flowers in so many ways because they are so unassuming and yet so alive and so real. This is just a piece of her poem called Daisies. "It is possible, I suppose, that sometime we will learn everything there is to learn. What the world is, for example, and what it means. I think this as I'm crossing from one field to another in the summertime. At my feet, the white-petaled daisies display the small suns of their centerpiece. There, if you don't mind my saying so, their hearts. Of course, I could be wrong. Perhaps their hearts are pale and narrow and hidden in the roots. What do I know? But this... it is heaven itself to take what is given, to see what is plain, what the sun lights up willingly. For example, I think this as I reach down, not to pick, but merely to touch. I think of the sustainability of the field for the daisies and the daisies for the field. I think of the suitability of the field for the daisies and the daisies for the field." There's a lesson right there. They're not questioning why they're here. The field isn't questioning why these daisies are here. And the daisies are feeling right at home, that it is suitable for them to be growing in the field. What a lesson for us. With our questioning minds, this doesn't feel quite right. I don't want to be here. I'm uncomfortable. How about just recognizing our suitability to be where we are in the moment and the suitability of the moment to hold us. There are so many simple, easy, and visible lessons in the flowers. The one thing that I really want to share today is the happiness that flowers give to me and the happiness that I see them giving to just about everybody. Who knows someone that doesn't like flowers? Does anyone know someone who doesn't like flowers? I don't think so. You do, Marie.
I know someone who's allergic.
Someone who's allergic to flowers isn't really like someone who doesn't like flowers. I have a friend who's allergic to nuts, but he would love to eat nuts. The point is that flowers are a pretty universal source of happiness. And they're often free. You walk around and see them growing on trees and growing in fields. So this just came to me. Truly, sometimes we work so hard at happiness. Sometimes we work so hard at making things work and thinking we've got to get it right. Nature isn't doing that. Nature isn't doing that. And friends, the more I live, the more I'm witnessing and experiencing in my life that there is, in fact, a flow. That it can, in fact, be easier than we think. Another lesson of nature. Another lesson of the flowers. Perhaps, just perhaps, we can allow ourselves to be vulnerable and to be disarmed by the beauty of the flowers and by the beauty of nature. Our work in the world does matter, yet our worth is not measured by our work in the world. Our worth is measured by what we share, by the radiance that we share with the world. We all have it. Let's let the flowers make us smile and share that smile with the world. We'll each be leaving today with a flower that was given by someone else in this sanctuary. It's good. It's good. May we transform the world one smile at a time. May it be so, and blessed be. You are holding in your hands a gift of community brought with love, shared with love, because it matters. Go in peace and go in love as we join in our closing song, Carry the Flame, Carry the Flower, and Carry the Flame, and Carry the Smile, and Share It.